This was said with a careless, abstracted indifference, which showed that my solicitude was, at least in his opinion, wholly superfluous. I was silenced. He still slowly moved his finger over his upper lip, and still his eye dwelt dreamily on the glowing grate. Thinking it urgent to say something, I asked him presently if he felt any cold draught from the door, which was behind him. "No, no," he responded shortly and somewhat testily. "Well," I reflected, "if you won't talk, you may be still. I'll let you alone now and return to my book." So I snuffed the candle and resumed the perusal of Marmion. He soon stirred. My eye was instantly drawn to his movements. He only took out a Morocco pocket-book, thence produced a letter which he read in silence, folded it, put it back, relapsed into meditation. It was vain to try to read with such an inscrutable fixture before me, nor could I, in my impatience, consent to be dumb. He might rebuff me if he liked, but talk I would. "Have you heard from Diana and Mary lately?"
"Not since the letter I showed you a week ago."
"There has not been any change made about your own arrangements? You will not be summoned to leave England sooner than you expected?"
"I fear not, indeed. Such chance is too good to befall me."
Baffled so far, I changed my ground. I bethought myself to talk about the school and my scholars.